Howard's sharing of his story was the perfect preface to the preface of my sermon, which is that he invoked the Unitarian Jesus, the Unitarian Christianity that can exist among us and that sometimes we call on to help us make sense of the world. So today, as the United Methodist Church has just reached a pinnacle point in their understanding of how to do congregational life and who can be among them, I wish to preach to you by way of a letter, which is the practice of the Apostle Paul, one of the 12 disciples, who was a student during and after his life, or mostly after his life, and who took that relationship of student becoming teacher very seriously. And so when a community wasn't accessible or when preaching couldn't be done quickly enough, getting to them couldn't be done quickly enough, they would preach by letter. And so today, this is how I offer to you the sermon. I want you to know that, one, I'll be asking you to use the muscles of your heart as well as your head today. But also, when I am saying you, it is typically to the United Methodist Church to whom I write this letter. So to whom it may concern, or to whom it causes sorrow. 13 years ago, I entered the halls of Union Theological Seminary, a non-denominational Christian institution where Baptists sang praise songs with atheist Unitarians and where Quakers and Pentecostals taught everyone what it meant to listen up for the Holy Spirit. It was the place where my faith was not only challenged, but in its expansion, in the friendships I made outside of my own denomination, in the way that I learned what true diversity looks and acts and feels like in loving tension, it is where my faith was saved. You see, unlike the United Methodists, we are a relatively young faith. A birth of early Christianity meets transcendentalism meets humanism. We are born from the same story as you, United Methodists. The birth and life and death of Jesus, but well, you could say we answered the questions evoked from that time differently than you. Where the United Methodists are Trinitarian, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, like the flesh and skin and core of an apple, we are Unitarian, inspired by the prophet of Jesus, who, like each of us, is an instrument, an expression of one divine source, one, not three. It's changed a bit over time. Sometimes the Judeo-created by the humanist reason. Sometimes the reason is stretched by the poetry of transcendentalism. Either way, we are a rather odd bunch, all tied together by principles instead of a creed. Can you imagine asking all of those beliefs and more to say the same thing come Sunday? I mean, if we're honest, you've got as much theological diversity in your midst. We just talk about ours. On the question of salvation, my guess is the Venn diagram is a bit bigger in the overlap. You believe that salvation can happen over and over again each time we recognize ourselves as being in relationship with that sacred something you call God. I'm not sure most of my people would use that same language, but some of our ministers do. That's one of the interesting, fun, impossible things about Unitarian Universalists. We're not one note, rarely one voice. Theological confetti, I think I once said to describe us. Where there are two rabbis, Jews joke, there are three answers. Two Unitarian Universalists? Oh boy, you're lucky if you get four. It's not always as pretty as confetti, though, if I'm being honest. But of course, this is perhaps something else we have in common. This past week, you dared to ask one another to speak a word of clarity. do you, all of you, in the entire world who claim the name United Methodist, on this continent and on all others, you dared to poke at that word united and even ultimately at what it meant to be Methodist. And your people asked one another if those who love someone of the same gender, those whose given bodies do not match the one that they were meant to inhabit, those who live outside or fluidly among the gender norms of societies throughout the world, could those people, my people, could they call themselves United Methodists? Could their marriages be blessed? Their lives deemed worthy? Could their call to ministry, to serve, even those who detest their love, their life, could they be recognized in their want to serve? Dear friends of mine have written that those who are shocked by your answer, which was not only a firm no, but a doubling down on seeking out and punishing those people, my people, those who were shocked were not the LGBT community within your ranks. There was, of course, hope, desperate, believing hope, but not shock when it failed. For all the ways a person can be marginalized, there has always been a church to carry a people, except for those people, my people. Even my Unitarian Universalists, who can tout and should proudly that we were the first denomination to ordain the LGBTQ community, the congregation I serve was one of the first in the country to do so. And still, my trans siblings struggle to get a job in any of our congregations, struggle to have their call affirmed, to hear a congregation sing their name. We have been affirming their lives since the 80s, and it was only last year that someone was moved into a called, not hired, position. And if we're being honest, my arrival to this congregation kicked up anxiety about becoming, whatever that means. And so in some ways, I applaud you for the clarity you sought, for the line in the sand that unlocked closet doors, letting the whole-bodied, full-spirited truth of your people spill out into the pews. The resistance that was cloaked in rainbow of every age and race and orientation and expression was beauty raw, even in, perhaps especially in, your rage. But I grieve with you all the same. There will be some who can withstand the hunt for their collars, who will find hope in their particular congregation's holy heresy, where all will be loved out loud. But so many have also lost their church this week. Their village has had fault lines run through it. Children have heard again another word that their lives are not worthy of love or affirmation. Their belief in the goodness of people and how love can win has been tested, and some won't return. There's a story that says Michelangelo was asked by the Pope to speak of his creative process, the genius behind his artistry. Specifically, how had Michelangelo come to sculpt the David? You can picture it, I'm sure. It is a masterpiece, the way his body tilts to the left, the details within the stone, his veins, his muscles, his locks of hair. Do you know what Michelangelo said? "It's simple," he responded. "I just removed everything that wasn't David." In the 1800s, when Theodore Parker, one of our early Unitarian Transcendentalists, wrote a book entitled The Transient and the Permanent, he spoke of that which will come and go with culture wars and interests, the transient. And he propped that up against the stability of everything that isn't David. He said God, but in truth, I wonder sometimes What would happen if we Unitarian Universalists drew a line in the sand? If all of our whole-bodied, full-spirited selves spilled out into the pews, of course, we appropriately have chairs. Would the world watch with cynical hope that we would be who we say we are? And if they looked closely, would they see us searching for one another, finding the beauty, the detail, the artistry of one another, like Michelangelo could see David within the block of marble? Would we be tightening the ropes, the web that we claim connects us in order to withstand the passing storm, the transient things? Could we name that which is permanent among us? When Kathy Fry, who was serving as our board president of the time, went in for surgery, she expected to be home the next week, and I think leading our next couple board meetings, if I'm remembering correctly. And when that surgery turned into something of nightmares, and when that 1 week became 6 months, I would drive home from the hospital, leaving Bernice, Kathy's wife, who was clutching another stack of cards, answering calls and eating the food that this congregation had made. And I would weep on the phone with Tara and wonder out loud how anyone goes through this life without a church. I grieve with you that some among you have lost their church. Because I could tell you this story in a million ways about a dozen different people in our confetti congregation, and perhaps the best I could say to make you understand is that one of our newest members says he feels Jesus among us. Though I wouldn't say it quite like that, I know exactly what he means. But I can feel the risk all the time of living in that tension that true diversity creates, and trying, working, making it a discipline that becomes something loving. It is magic, if not miracle, that we don't harm each other more. And I wonder if my people, if I appreciate this enough. I want you to know, my dear United Methodists, for whom sorrow and rage now accompany your place of peace, though we will honor your love of your particular theology, and we will not dismiss that by suggesting you belong among us when you already have a home. We will not meet the sin of spiritual certainty and judgment with the same. I offer to you that the church is not God. And the institution is not sacrosanct. We, like you, believe in the necessary exchange of faith and works, that we believe that what we believe must be confirmed by what we do. So continue to take your place in the pulpits and pews. Teach us your new name, your correct pronoun. Marry your beloved on the altar that you bless with your love and that has blessed you in your beliefs. Let the world learn that there are too many of us who see you through the walls of marble that they have built around you. Too many of us who see you to keep you enclosed. You are a masterpiece. And in this old, transient, nonsensical, remind all of us of the holy work of choosing one another. Not shrouded in our own image, but after our comforts have been chipped away and all that is left is you and me. And the holy heresy of making a place in which we can grow and love together in tension and in joy. Albert Schweitzer said, "The path of awakening is not about becoming who you are. Rather, it is about unbecoming who you are not." We are grateful for your bravery. May we too fight to be one church. Some hope. to soften the cynic's watch. May it be so. May we make it so, and blessed be.